I'm Laura Hunsberger for South Carolina Public Radio. This edition of Narrative features an interview from StoryCorps, a unique oral history project that collects the voices of our times. In 2012, Wilson McElveen went to the StoryCorps mobile booth in Charleston to share letters written during World War I to his grandmother, Caroline Wardlaw Reese. Her boyfriend at that time, a young man named Augustus Jerome Beck, enrolled in the Army in 1918 and wrote to her throughout his time serving in Europe. Here's Wilson McElveen.
Today I came to talk about letters that were received during World War I by my grandmother, whose name was Caroline Wardlaw Reese McElveen. She received these letters from her boyfriend, or Beau as she called him. His name was Augustus Jerome Beck. My grandmother was born in 1898 in Abbeville, South Carolina, to Henry Dobson and Ella Bradley Reese. She was married to my grandfather, who was not Augustus Jerome Beck. She was married to my grandfather, Wilson Ashby McElveen, in 1923, and the remainder of her life she lived in Sumter, South Carolina. In 2006, we found the letters my grandmother received during World War I from her former beau, and all of these were neatly stashed in chronological order in a stationery box. In my research, that I found out that Jerome Beck was from Anderson, South Carolina. Jerome had been a student at the University of South Carolina, and when the war broke out, like so many of his age, he left school to join the Army. Jerome joined the Army in Columbia in 1918 in May, and he returned to the U.S. a year later in May or June of 1919. When he returned, he re-enrolled in USC. In my summer search, I found the old annuals because I was looking to see if he was in there. And he was. He was actually president of his class and then president of the student body his senior year. After several years of doing Google searches, which I was never did come up with much, I did find a Jerome Beck Jr. who was living in Birmingham, Alabama. It was his son. He did have another brother who lived in Tennessee. His name was James Beck, and I was able to send him copies of all of the letters and the photographs, which they did not have. He said he had no idea any of this existed. He had no idea about my grandmother. They were so grateful to get that because they didn't know about his experiences in the war. His one comment to me was, I was so sad. You know, after reading all the letters, I was so disappointed that they actually broke up. And we have no idea what happened or why they broke up. But the letters themselves, and I want to read a few of them. There's probably 40 of them. The letters are pretty vague as during the war as to where his whereabouts were. He couldn't really say a lot because it would be censored, and he didn't think it would make it to her. I think that, you know, you'll see, and you can tell every time, or I could, that the saying, the absence makes the heart grow fonder, definitely was the case with him. I mean, as time went on, he talked more and more about how much he loved her. He uses slang at the time. He refers to the Germans as Jerry's and Fritz. He talks about the Spanish flu, which was the big flu pandemic back then, and about people in America that they knew that had it, and also over there in Europe that had the Spanish flu. But one of the biggest themes in the letters is he is constantly lamenting that he has not received any letters from my grandmother. They would come in sporadically. You know, he was moving all around. I think it's amazing that he got the number of letters that he did. You know, they may not get them in order either. He may get one day that was in September, and then the next time the mail came in, the letter was from July prior to that September. So they, you know, it was kind of hit and miss. There's one thing throughout all of the letters. He keeps talking about the first letter that he wrote, which was on the ship. And he keeps wanting to know, have you gotten that letter? And I don't know exactly what was in that letter, but it must have been very important. And unfortunately, we do not have that letter. It's very curious as to what he might have said. But I did want to take, he did go over in the ship called the George Washington. And interestingly, the George Washington actually in, I believe it was 1912, it was a German passenger ship. And when the war broke out, it was docked in the United States, and it remained there until the U.S. decided to get into the war, and they actually took it over, and they used that to take the troops over to France. I think it was about 50,000 troops ended up coming over on that ship. But anyway, I want to read some of the letters. This first one is the first letter that we have that she had received, and it was written on May the 31st, 1918, and it goes like this. My dearest Caroline, I have wanted to write you several times since my arrival, but have been moving so much that I could not find the time. At the port at which I landed, we were given 3 days to rest from our sea voyage. We were quartered in some old French army barracks. They look more like a penitentiary than anything I've ever seen before. Some say Napoleon with his old guard inhabited them. We were not given any leave to take in the town or city. Rather, while we were there, the colonel took the entire school detachment out for little hikes each morning. It was on these trips that I got my first views and impressions of France. The scenery was beautiful, and the French villages were very picturesque. The effects of the war could be seen on every hand, though. No young men were ever seen at all. Nothing but children and old men. Everywhere, women were doing the work formerly done by men. Their spirit is noble. You could see grim determination written on their faces, as well as a willingness to sacrifice everything for their France. Our next experiences were with the French railroad. Did you ever see one of those passenger coaches? If you have not, you should. Anyway, 8 of us made one compartment our home for 3 days and nights. I don't think I've quite gotten rid of all my kinks yet. We passed through several large cities, but not Paris. I saw many interesting sights that someday I'll be able to tell you about, I hope. The city where I am now is a very interesting place. It is truly a large citadel situated on the top of a mountain, surrounded by a big stone wall, parts of which date back to the days of the Romans, so they say. They have tremendous gates and drawbridges of Roman Gothic architecture. The scenery of the surrounding country is truly grand. Mountains, canals, lakes, etc. One of the U.S. Army schools is located here, and I am attending the signal school. I understand I am to be here 6 weeks, and then it is to the front. I guess I don't mind it, though, as I am anxious to see a little of the genuine thing. I imagine I'll be more anxious to get back home after I have experienced some of it, though. All of the boys are in good spirits, of course. Of course, we would like to be back in the good old U.S., but there is not one of us who really wants to go until this war is won. We are all determined to win or die in the attempt. From the preparations I have seen going on, old Uncle Sam is going to show Kaiser Bill how to conduct a war and raise a little hell to boot. I am very pleasantly surrounded and situated here, but I can't help but think about you and the home folks. Understand, I don't get exactly blue or homesick, but sometimes I'd give a whole lot to see you. I have not heard a line from anyone in America yet. You can bet your life I am anxiously looking forward to the day that will bring me some mail, especially from you. Did you ever receive my letter written on the ship? I hope you did. You know the reason, don't you? Yesterday was Memorial Day, and it was celebrated with a holiday at the school with a band concert, parade, patriotic dresses, etc. I thought I would die when the band played certain pieces. I remember distinctly of dancing with a certain young lady with the tunes of them. You can well imagine how I felt with about 4,000 miles separating us. If I ever do get back to a certain place in South Carolina, I don't think I will be apt to roam very far. Guess by the time you receive this letter, you will have successfully finished another college year. Gee, but doesn't time fly? Write me and tell me all the news as well as otherwise. Have no fear, your letter will not be censored. I don't give a rip for his censoring mine or anyone else knowing that I love you. If the censor knew you, he would love you too. With all my heart, I am as ever, Jerome. P.S. Give everybody my regards. This next letter, I think, gives a very good description of the discomforts he endured while being on the front, and also of, again, his feelings for my grandmother. It isn't a complete letter. The very end of it we do not have. This is written in France, and it was on September the 22nd, 1918. My dearest, instead of throwing rocks at Berlin, wrestling with Kaiser Bill on the banks of the Rhine, or teaching the German children the Star-Spangled Banner, I am back at the place I was at school before. This time, however, it is at an officer's training school instead of a signal specialist. I was recommended and sent partly against my will, but since I'm here, I'm going to work hard and get my commission. I will be here for 3 months. I've been here for a week already and have intended on writing you sooner, but it is a rush from 5:45 a.m. until 9 p.m. How is that for a working man? They say we are supposed to be fit for a commission before we came here and that the course is only an elimination process. I know that it is much better here than it is on the line. We get 3 good meals a day and a night's rest, and that is more than we did at the front. It is quite a relief to be out of the way of Jerry's whistling pigs or the ton air bombs, etc. Up there, your rest consisted of lying down in the mud or on the cement floor, dislocating your hips while trying to forget shells were falling about or that Jerry was coming over in his night buggy, dropping eggs around. After a few minutes of rest, you'd get up, shake yourself, and commence a day of labor anew. I am going to write Mama to give my room to the cow, and I'll take the barn when I come home. I would love to send you a picture of the last barn I stayed in, but you see, Fritz might intercept my letter, see the picture, and know exactly where I was. On top of all these troubles, the greatest and hardest to endure is the absence of mail from you. Disappointment at each mail. I can't believe you are not writing. I have thought once or twice that the tone of your letters was a little different. Perhaps it is due to your failing to get my letters. I love you, adore you, and worship you. My thoughts are of you from the peep of first dawn until the evening twilight shadows are no more. Without your letters, the joy of living would be taken from me. Dearest, you know fervently I love you, don't you? I know your heart still beats as fondly and as true. Do you ever sit and converse with me through the vast space? I do, and sometimes I feel your spirit. I see you, in fact, see your sweet face and hear your gentle voice, and it is at these times that I know that you love me. The rest of the letter's gone. It just makes me wonder, you know, I don't know what happened after he got back, whether he was a changed man due to the war or, you know, my grandmother was a changed person when he got back, and that probably unfortunately happens even with couples that are married. But I don't even know how long they dated before he went off to war. It was in May that he went over there, and I know that at least in the Christmas before and January, they were dating because he talked about something that went on during that time. He doesn't give any specifics. I will say that what I did find out from the son is how much he and my own grandfather, their lives paralleled. My grandfather was a pharmacist that was married to my grandmother and for a few years, and then he didn't like doing that and opened up a car dealership and did that until he died. And Jerome Beck, he, after the war, went to work for Ford Motor Company in Atlanta. Both he and my grandfather joined World War II, and after World War II, he went and opened up a car dealership in Birmingham, Alabama. So thought that was very interesting that they had those kind of parallels. This next letter is actually giving his descriptions of Armistice Day. This was written on November the 15th, 1918. Dearest sweetheart, it seems Providence has followed me throughout the war after having been taken out of the line and sent to school when the division was going in for one of the bloodiest battles of the war. I was then sent from the officers' training school to the front where the greatest minute in the world's history came to pass. I was on my way to join my command, feeling that I was facing the hardest time in my life, not for my sake, but for the realization that the lives of 50 men depended on my judgment and action. Then, for the first time in 4 years, a mysterious and deadly silence fell over the Western Front. It was the most tense, dramatic, and pleasant moment I ever experienced in my life. It was almost impossible to realize that that which man had come to regard as his occupation had ended as suddenly as it had begun. I wish the people in the U.S. could have seen the demonstration on the front that night. Both sides tried to shoot up all the flares and rockets they possessed. It was certainly a display of fireworks. Upon reporting to my command, I was reassigned to my old job, a signal officer. I like the other officers fine, as they are a very congenial set. Most all of them are from Maryland and Pennsylvania. Our game is one of watchful waiting now. We are in a place where Jerry had resided for 4 years. It sure was fixed up, too. Beds, stoves, electric lights, waterworks systems, etc., in the dugouts. You should have seen me reposed in the dugout of a former German major. I am now doing business in what is left of a city hall in a village Jerry held for 4 years. The question of how long it will last has changed to how long will it be before we go home. I think it will be 6 months, but hope it will be sooner. Can you believe that the time is near when I'll be back to dear old Caroline, the state, and the girl? It's hard for me to realize it. As I have changed addresses again, I don't look for any mail for 2 months. Tough to be like a traveling circus, huh? By the way, can you imagine how I felt when we were leaving for the front that night when a tenor singer of repute and note climbed on the wall of the fort and sang his farewell and goodbye song to us fellows. The song was, "Don't You Hear Me Calling, Caroline?" As I stood there listening to the soft, mellow notes of that haunting melody gradually die away across the valley, a choking lump came into my throat, and my heart swelled as though it would burst. It was about the saddest yet most pleasant moment I ever felt. 'Tis beautiful to love. Hoping to see you soon and tell you the many, many experiences I have had, I remain as ever, Jerome.
Wilson McElveen at the StoryCorps Mobile Booth in Charleston with World War I Era Letters by Jerome Beck. Produced locally by Laura Hunsberger for South Carolina Public Radio. For more on the story and more narrative and StoryCorps interviews, visit southcarolinapublicradio.org. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Laura Hunsberger.